verses 6 to 12, and then Job chapter 2, verses 1 to 6. So the book of Job, the first chapter, starting at verse 6. One day the angels came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them. The Lord said to Satan, "Where have you come from?" Satan answered the Lord, "From roaming through the earth and going to and fro in it." Then the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? There is no one on earth like him. He is blameless and upright, a man who fears God and shuns evil." "Does Job fear God for nothing?" Satan replied. "Have you not put a hedge around him and his household and everything he has? You have blessed the work of his hands so that his flocks and herds are spread throughout the land. But stretch out your hand and strike everything he has, and he will surely curse you to your face." The Lord said to Satan, "Very well, then everything he has is in your hands, but on the man himself do not lay a finger." Then Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. If you know the story of Job, you know that Satan caused disruption to Job's life through attacking his family, his flocks, his servants. And we pick up again in chapter 2 and verse 1. On another day the angels came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them to present himself before him. And the Lord said to Satan, "Where have you come from?" Satan answered the Lord, "From roaming through the earth and going to and fro in it." Then the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? There is no one on earth like him. He is blameless and upright, a man who fears God and shuns evil, and he still maintains his integrity, though you incited me against him to ruin him without any reason." "Skin for skin," Satan replied. "A man will give all he has for his own life. But stretch out your hand and strike his flesh and bones, and he will surely curse you to your face." The Lord said to Satan, "Very well then, he is in your hands, but you must spare his life." God allowed time of pressure, of discomfort, of challenge to happen in the life of Job. And God allows it in our lives. And he allows it, in the life of Hezekiah. And we've been looking last Sunday and today at King Hezekiah, as his story is found in the book of 2 Chronicles. And tonight we're going to bring this little series of thoughts from the life of Hezekiah to a conclusion, looking at chapter 32 of 2 Chronicles. I've entitled it "Under Pressure." Under. That's what Hezekiah in this portion of God's word is under in this time in his life. He was under pressure. Life often is good. This was last Christmas. I was at our daughter's house and was pictured with our three grandchildren hanging off me, or me holding on to them. was a good time. It was a time to relax. It was a time to spend with the grandchildren. And I didn't know what the coming months had to were going to bring for me in my life. For those of you who don't know, at the beginning of April, I was diagnosed with heart disease and went on to have a heart attack in the middle of April. And thankfully, God has brought me through that. But I didn't know that life was going to be like that. And as I was thinking about this message, as I sat there with my kids, life was really good. But if somebody had said, "There's a roaring lion at the gate," life would suddenly have changed. Your whole perspective would have changed. It wouldn't have been so good. There'd have been panic, there'd have been worry. You'd have thought, "Why is that happening?" And in a sense, that's a bit like what Hezekiah faces in chapter 32 of 2 Chronicles. The chapter starts off with this one. Have I turned it off? Starts off, "After all that Hezekiah had so faithfully done." Hezekiah had been really faithful. If you're not familiar with this story, Hezekiah came to the throne, taking over the throne from his wicked father Ahaz, who had done so much to bring the land of Judah into a terrible situation. He'd made bad decisions. He had rejected the God of his father and the God of the nation, and the nation was in a complete mess. And Hezekiah, when he came to the throne, he opened up the temple, he cleaned the temple out, and he celebrated a Passover feast with not only the people of Judah, but also some of the Israelites, some of the Sumerians, who were the other 10 tribes, came and celebrated the Passover with them. And chapter 32 starts off, "After all that Hezekiah had so faithfully done." You'd expect that things, having done all these faithful things, having done all this hard work, would go well. Not many of the kings of Israel or Judah would have this said about them, after all that they had so faithfully done, because as you read these chapters in 2 Chronicles, you discover that the kings of Israel and Judah were a pretty motley lot, and most of them had had things which they did or flaws in their character which they would not be proud of. You would expect that things would go well after all that Hezekiah had faithfully done. But. There's a but. Whenever we're trying to live for God, as we saw from the reading from Job, Satan knows when God's people are being obedient and doing his will. And he tries hard to stop us. Surely, because he's been doing God's will, Satan attacks Hezekiah. God looks after him, as we will see. But that doesn't mean that his life remains a bed of roses. Satan's not happy, and he tries hard to stop Hezekiah. I believe, prompted by Satan, Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, who was the most powerful man in that part. ancestors David wrote in the Psalms, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, thou art with me. I wonder if Hezekiah claimed the promise of that verse as he saw the armies of Assyria at the head of King Sennacherib advancing on his kingdom. Satan, I'm sure, realised the quality of his opposition, and he would roll out the big guns against Hezekiah. He was the most, he sent in Sennacherib, the most powerful force in the region at that time. And as we go down through this chapter, in verse 2 we see, when Hezekiah saw that Sennacherib had come and that he intended to make war on Jerusalem, he consulted with his officials and military staff, and they come up with a plan. And here's the plan that he comes up with. First of all, there in Jerusalem, and if you know anything about the geography of Israel and Jerusalem, you know that Jerusalem is built on a mountain. It's raised up. You can see all the way around it. And there's water that comes into the city. Obviously the rain falls and water's gathered. And there were springs that flowed off the mountain, off the mount that Jerusalem was built on. And the first thing they do is he decides to block all the springs flowing off the mountain of Jerusalem. And he says, why should the kings of Assyria come and find plenty of water? So he starts to make it a bit difficult for Sennacherib. The next thing they do, we read, is they work hard at repairing the broken sections of the wall. They then build new towers on the wall. He then builds another wall outside the first one. We're told in verse 5 that he reinforces the supporting terraces of Jerusalem. And he set men to work to make a large number of weapons and shields. But he prepares for war by appointing military officers over the people. And then he speaks to the people. He encourages them, and we'll think a wee bit about that speech just in a wee minute. But just as we get this picture, the Assyrian army would be coming. They didn't fly in jets. afraid or discouraged, because the king of Assyria and the vast army with him, for there is a great, be strong and courageous, because of, be strong and courageous, do not be afraid or discouraged, because of the king of Assyria and the vast army with him, for there is a greater power with us than with him. With him is only the arm of flesh, but with us is the Lord our God to help us and to fight our battles. So here's this source of Hezekiah's confidence. He tells them to be strong and courageous, not to be afraid or discouraged by this vast army. Hezekiah made that speech, that short speech, to the people. Here's what the chronicler, the comment he makes. And the people gained confidence from what Hezekiah, the king of Judah, said. Not from what he did, he hadn't. He'd done things strengthen Jerusalem. But we're not told that that gave them any more confidence. That maybe would have bought them a bit of time in the battle, but Sennacherib's army was still stronger than theirs. What gave them real confidence was from what Hezekiah said, and what he said was, there is a greater power with us than with him. And so when Satan attacks us, we're not to take confidence in our abilities. We're not to think we can fight this ourselves, because Satan is a strong power. We saw that when we read from Job. Satan can cause us to suffer if he wants. But it was when Hezekiah told the people that there was a greater power with us than with him. That's what gave him the confidence to know that this wasn't going to turn out a disaster. Sennacherib came and he attacked different cities. And we're told in verse 9, later when Sennacherib, king of Assyria, and all his forces were laying siege to Lachish, which was the second town of Judah, he sent his officers to Jerusalem with this message for Hezekiah. And here's what he said to the people. Hezekiah is going, oh, it's very small, isn't it? There's lots of things that he said. You might not be able to say it. He said, Hezekiah is going to let you die rather than lead you to victory. He said, you're trusting in the Lord as your God, but you've got rid of all our gods who gave us our great strength. And the people of nations believed that their strength, their ability, came from their gods. And Hezekiah, one of the things that he did was he had got rid of all the false gods from Jerusalem. actually saw this morning, also from some of the other tribes or tribal lands around Jerusalem after they had celebrated the Passover. And Sennacherib would have known that because he says, you're trusting in the one and only one God. You've only got one God fighting for you. What good is that going to be? You've got rid of all our gods, and our gods have given us victory. If you'd followed our gods, maybe they'd have preferred you to us. But you don't have a chance. You've only got one God. You've only one altar left for your God. You've got rid of all the other altars, all the other high places where people were sacrificing to God. You've got rid of them. And you've said it's only at the temple in Jerusalem that you should offer sacrifices to God. Verse 13, he says, don't you know how strong I am? And he taunts them also, were the gods of other nations ever able to save them? They thought their gods were strong enough. There was nothing that they could do against us. And because of that, how then can your God deliver you from my hand? He says, look at history. This is how it was with my fathers, so it will be again. When my fathers were out to war, we won. There's no giant killing going on here. Not going to happen. Manchester City are going to win everything yet again, or whatever the team is. This is how it was with my father, so it will be again. It's inevitable. And then in verses 16 and 17, they ramp up the pressure because they don't just send people writing, they start to speak to them in their own language. And they wrote letters insulting God and Hezekiah, and they speak to them in Hebrew to terrify the people, and they speak of God as if he were just another God made by men's hands. If we go down through each one of these, your God's going to let you die rather than lead you to victory. You face Satan, and we die. You're trusting in the Lord as your God, but you've got rid of all our gods and who give us our great strength. Do we trust in things? Will money, will a nice house, etc. help us? You've only one altar left for your God. Do you need more than one opportunity, one altar, one way in which we come before our God? Sennacherib says, don't you know how strong I am? How strong is Satan? He is strong, but God is stronger. Were the gods of other nations ever able to save them? No, they weren't. But was their God the Lord? How can your God deliver you from my hand? Well, we know that our God is capable of anything. This is how it was with my father, so it will be again. Does history have to repeat itself? No, it doesn't. Things can change. Not only did they speak, but they also wrote letters insulting God and Hezekiah. No matter how many ways people said, it doesn't increase the power of their message. They spoke in Hebrew to terrify the people. We may feel inferior, this Sennacherib and his army, his advisors, are ramping up the pressure on the Hebrews. What an attack they're under. What would you do in that situation? Verse 20 of 2 Chronicles 32 tells us what happened. King Hezekiah and the prophet Isaiah, son of Amos, cried out in prayer to heaven about this. What a response from Hezekiah and the prophet Isaiah. They cried out in prayer to heaven about this. When we come under attack from Satan, that ought to be our response as well. Maybe things in our life that do need to change, but our ultimate response is that we have to cry out to God. Will God work? Will God act? Hezekiah had relied and told the people not to be afraid. With us is the Lord our God. This is where, if you like, it comes right down to the nub of the matter. What happens? Well, what happens is just amazing. Chapter 32, verse 21. And the Lord sent an angel. He annihilated all the fighting men and the leaders and officers in the camp of the Assyrian king. So he withdrew to his own land in disgrace. And when he went into the temple of his God, some of his sons cut him down with the sword. Sent an angel who annihilated all the fighting men and leaders in the camp of the Assyrian king. What an amazing thing. Here was this man who was so proud, so full of himself, so sure that victory was his. And Hezekiah and all the officers that he'd appointed and all the new battlements that he'd put in place were not needed because God acted. And things were so bad that Sennacherib had to withdraw to his own land in disgrace. And there, entering the temple of his God, some of his sons cut him down with the sword. And we read, so the Lord saved Hezekiah from the hand of Sennacherib and from the hand all the others. He took care of them on every side. There was no chink in the armor that God had put around the people of Israel. When something like that happens, what's our response? I hope that it would be something like the response of the Israelites. We're told that many brought offerings to Jerusalem for the Lord and valuable gifts for Hezekiah the king, and from then on Hezekiah was highly regarded by all the nations. I think the lesson for us is there will be times when we're tested. There will be times when the testing will be intense. There will be times when it will seem that there's no way through that testing. There are things maybe that we can do to prepare, reduce the testing, as we saw that Hezekiah did. But if we turned to God, as Hezekiah did, and God is ready, he will act if we remain faithful to him. It's when we take our eyes off him that's when we have the problems. So what lessons have we got to take away from this story of Hezekiah and how he dealt with the threat of Sennacherib? I would suggest, I think I've got 8 different lessons that we can take away with. The first one, when things are going well, be on your guard. Satan may be about to attack you. Being prepared is important. Being on your guard, being aware of possibilities so that we're not caught off guard. One of the things that maybe we would help us if we're not caught off guard is to examine ourselves and what areas of our lives are our weaknesses. What are the things that Satan uses to attack us? And it may be very subtle things. It might be that I really like having a new pair of shoes. I just can't resist the purchase. For me, it wouldn't be fancy leather shoes. It would be trainers. Expensive running shoes. I would love a pair, and that would be just great to have that new pair. But maybe I don't need them. I have about 5 pairs at home. Some that are in a better state of repair than others. But is that a weakness? Is that a way in which maybe a silly example, but know our weaknesses. What are the areas of our life where Satan might attack us? The second thing I think to take away is now is the time to establish a strategy to counter Satan. To understand what helped Hezekiah and the people of Judah and Israel at that time, and to understand how they responded, and that we established that pattern of behaviour. And it was very simple. It was that they had a close relationship. Hezekiah had a close relationship with God, and he knew to turn to him. And that's the best strategy that we can have. It's important to cultivate that and develop that so that when we are attacked, we know what to fall back on. The third thing is to remember that there is a greater power with us than with him. That was what the message Hezekiah gave, the message that he lived by. The reason why he didn't form a treaty with Sennacherib, because despite the fact that he was the all-conquering hero of his time, there was a power with Hezekiah that was greater than with him. Another maybe simple thing to say but difficult thing to do is don't make it easy for Satan to attack you. Don't put yourself in positions where Satan can attack us. Be aware of our weaknesses, our difficulties. And don't allow Satan to have the opportunity to attack us in that area. Look to the example of others, or speak with other believers. A relationship with fellow believers. We could go maybe to any some people who you find it easier to talk to or who you have confidence in talking to. It may be that it's the right thing to do to gather a close group, a small group of close people who you could go and speak to. We are not robots. We have emotions, we have feelings, and we may well feel under pressure. We may feel overwhelmed at times. And it's not a sin, but it should drive us back to God and to the help of other fellow believers. The next thing I put is to know and use your source of defense and retaliation, which is prayer. Keep a close walk with God. And sometimes it can be so easy just to let that slip, to miss out on one day, oh, so busy, I didn't have time to pray. Somebody remember the quote, I'm so busy I have to pray 3 hours a day. That's not the way I feel. I don't think I've ever felt that, but I'm so busy I've felt very busy, but I've never felt that sense that the answer to my busyness was to get up 3 hours earlier and pray for 3 hours. 15 minutes earlier I'm paid for it. But 3 hours. But it's understand that. And whoever it was that I heard that quote of had an understanding of that, the importance of prayer, and that the more we're under attack, the more we need to pray. And the last thing to remind ourselves, of Judah that Hezekiah was the king of were just a small nation. They were only two of the tribes of the 12 tribes of Israel. They were just a little nation in that vast area. Syria was huge. To the north was Damascus and the kings there. To the south was Egypt.